Lose weight and keep it off. The healthy way. The director of Watson Clinic's Metabolic and Weight Center, Dr. Lilian Chiquez, tells us how. Coming up next on the premiere episode of Watson Clinic Health Talk. Welcome to the debut episode of Watson Clinic Health Talk. I'm your host, Jamie Duvall, a content strategist in the Watson Clinic Marketing Communications and Media Relations Department. A few general notes about the podcast before we bring on our guest. For those listeners who are unfamiliar, Watson Clinic is a physician-owned, multi-specialty clinic with over 350 physicians and providers, more than 40 medical and surgical specialties, and multiple locations across Polk, Pasco, and Hillsborough counties in Central Florida. This podcast will call upon the expertise of these physicians and providers in relaying important information on a variety of healthcare topics, from common conditions and disease prevention to the latest treatments and chronic care management techniques. Our guest today is Dr. Lilian Chiquez. She's a board-certified internal medicine and obesity medicine specialist at our Watson Clinic main location at 1600 Lakeland Hills Boulevard in Lakeland. She currently serves as the medical director of Watson Clinic, and she's the director of Watson Clinic's Metabolic and Weight Center, which is an extension of her practice. For more information and to schedule an appointment, visit watsonclinic.com/weightcenter or call 863-680-7190. Dr. Chiquez, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Jamie.
So I'd like to discuss with you the nuts and bolts of the Metabolic and Weight Center, but first I'd like to get a little general overview of the obesity epidemic as it stands today. How bad is it right now?
It is really bad. According to the CDC, about 42% of adults in the United States are obese, and 73% are overweight or obese. So the norm right now is for people to have an abnormal weight.
Wow. And how did we get to this point? What are the factors that have contributed to that rise in obesity?
There are many different factors. A lot has to do with the American diet, where a lot of the food that we consume is highly processed, and a lot of sugar added, and that has really contributed to the epidemic. There's also the factor that if we want to exercise, we have to go out of our way to do so. Exercise is not built into our regular routine for most of us. We have to drive everywhere. There are no opportunities to walk anywhere, like in other countries in Europe. When I visited Italy, I ate whatever I wanted, and I did not gain a pound, but I was also walking, taking stairs all day. I don't get a chance to do that in my daily routine. So I think those are important factors.
I'm wondering from you, what are some of the most common mistakes that people make when they venture on a weight loss journey?
I think choosing to do things that they will not be able to maintain. If you start a diet that is extremely restrictive, you won't be able to keep up with that. For example, if you decide to give up all fat in your diet, that's not normal. Eventually, you're going to have to eat some fat, and then things will go back to the way they were. So basically being too extreme, I would say, choosing things that are not sustainable in the long term.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to age myself here, but I'm a child of the 80s. And I remember even way back then, there was a big push for weight loss, fad diets. I mean, there was a major industry that built up around the need for weight loss. And people were desperate for a solution, so they fell victim to a lot of those things. So tell me, compared to something like that, what is the benefit for a patient who's seeking weight loss counsel from a physician-supervised, medically-based program such as yours?
I think the benefit is that we incorporate not just diet and exercise counseling, but that we are also able to look at the health of the patient, including any medical conditions that you may have, any medications that you may take. Some medications can contribute to weight gain, and I'm able to identify that when I see a patient in my practice and suggest alternative. I can discuss with their other physicians, and we can sometimes modify or eliminate medications that are contributing to the weight gain. And then we also have access to testing, so we are able to do blood work that may identify a problem with their thyroid, for example, or they may have diabetes, and that's something that we can use. They may have a problem with cortisol. So we're able to do testing that you would not be able to do if you go, I don't know, to Weight Watchers or if you try any diet on your own. And then we also have access to prescription medication that can be helpful depending on the patient. Not every medication will work for everybody, so we are able to tailor the medication options to the specific patient.
And the ongoing supervision, I mean, you could track their progress or what's not working, and you can kind of tweak the program to fit their particular needs. Right?
That's right. And sometimes people tell me just the accountability of having an appointment with your doctor frequently is very, very helpful, because you know that someone is watching, and sometimes people feel bad when they didn't do as well as they expected and they have to come see me. And I tell them they do not need to feel bad, because I'm there to help them achieve their goals. But it is helpful to have that accountability that you have an appointment every month or every 2 months, that you're going to have to be discussing what you have been doing with your lifestyle during that period of time.
I would imagine that when a patient with diabetes comes to see you, that brings with it a whole other set of considerations.
When you're talking about diabetes, a lot of times when people have also a problem with their weight, they have type 2 diabetes, which is a problem that comes when their body becomes resistant to insulin. And you become resistant to insulin when you have gained weight, and then your body is not able, when you eat sugar, is not able to deal with that sugar load, because the insulin doesn't work that well anymore. So then you have to make more insulin that contributes to weight gain. So in patients with diabetes, I normally recommend a diet that is reduced in carbohydrates.
Okay.
So that's normally what we would do. So carbohydrates are foods that are starchy or have sugar or that are sweet, as opposed to foods that are higher in protein that are normally animal products like eggs and fish, chicken and meat. Some vegetables will have some protein too. And then fat, and fat is usually also associated with animal products and oil.
Okay. And you have a medical nutritionist on your team.
We have a nurse practitioner, Amy Bird Moreno, and she is also a trained dietitian. So she is perfectly equipped and positioned to help our patients. We also work with the Watson Clinic dietitians, and they are also very helpful in assisting our patients.
I think one of the great benefits of seeking care from your program or from Watson Clinic in general is that you have open access to over 40 specialties. So if you find an issue with the patient that's related to cardiology, you can provide an easy referral to one of our cardiologists on staff. What are some of those common collaborations you share with other specialties?
I collaborate a lot with endocrinology, as you can imagine, because they specialize in diabetes, which is a huge problem in the population that I serve. They help with thyroid problems, which sometimes also appear in these kinds of patients. So I would say probably endocrinology the most. Sometimes with cardiology as well, because we do assess their cardiovascular health, and if there's if I identify something in their EKG, or if I have a question about using phentermine, which is another medication that we often prescribe, that is very cheap, affordable, is an older medication, but it can increase your blood pressure, it can increase your heart rate. I want to make sure that your heart is in good shape before prescribing that medication. Sometimes I will consult with the cardiologist to be sure.
So tell me, when someone calls the program to schedule a consultation, tell me what they can expect.
So when someone calls and makes an appointment, they can expect an initial appointment where we will take their whole medical history, medication history. We will do a complete physical exam. We will usually do blood work, and we will sometimes do an EKG as well, because there are some medications that we use that we need to make sure that their heart is working properly. And then after we do that evaluation, we also do dietary and exercise counseling. And in some situations, we can prescribe medication for weight loss. And like I said before, we evaluate the medications that patients are taking. And sometimes instead of adding a medication, we can take away a medication that is causing a problem and is causing people to be hungrier and gain weight. And that in itself can be very helpful.
The big news story in weight loss matters these days is Ozempic.
Yes.
We hear so much about Ozempic. So what's the deal with Ozempic? What can you tell me about that medication, how it works? Do you find success with it?
I do find a lot of success. Ozempic is one of a class of, a very exciting class of medications that have come into the market. It actually is a class of medication called the GLP-1 receptor agonist, and they have been around for a long time, I think for the last 24 years. So these are not new medications, but what is new is that the pharmaceutical companies have developed a class of medications that last longer in your body, as opposed to initially where you would have to dose twice daily. Now you can dose once weekly, and that's important because it's an injection and you don't want to be injecting yourself twice daily. So it's much more convenient. And they have also developed a medication that is more effective. The initial medications in this category were used for diabetes, and they could lead to some weight loss, but not nearly as much as Ozempic. So in Ozempic, the way it works, it mimics a hormone that your body naturally makes called GLP-1. And GLP-1 is a hormone that regulates blood sugar. It helps your pancreas make more insulin. And it also helps with satiety. It works at brain centers, and it tells your brain basically you have had enough food. You can stop eating now. And then it helps prolong the duration of that feeling. So it basically will make you feel like you had a big meal. So after I have had a big meal, you could put anything in front of me. You could put a box of chocolates and I won't touch them because I do not feel like it. But if you give me those chocolates before I eat the meal, then I will probably eat a bunch of them. And that's not going to be good. But I have a lot more willpower after eating that meal. And that's how Ozempic makes you feel. It makes you feel like you had a big meal and you don't feel like eating anymore.
So is Ozempic still paired with proper diet, this amount of physical activity, that sort of thing?
It's not a magic medication. It works for most people, but doesn't work for everybody. And it works better if you're also if you're conscious about diet and exercise and you're actively working on diet and exercise. A new problem that we have with this class of medications is that it works so well and that people can lose weight very fast, which you wouldn't think that it would be a problem. But if you lose weight too fast and you're not eating the proper foods, then you may lose, we always lose muscle and fat when we lose weight, but if you lose weight too fast and you're not getting enough nutrition, you're not getting enough protein, then you're gonna burn more muscle than you want. And the problem with losing muscle instead of fat is that then it will lead to you being weaker and fragile, but also your metabolic rate will drop. And if your metabolic rate drops too much, then you can imagine how that would be a problem. Then it would be easier for you to regain that weight.
Do you find that the side effects are generally manageable, and what are they?
Usually they are manageable. The side effects are mostly GI side effects. It makes you feel full, but it also slows down your whole GI tract. And what that means is that food will sit in your stomach a little longer. That can lead to reflux and also to nausea. And some people, a small amount of people, will have vomiting. So you can imagine that those people will struggle to continue to take the medication. And sometimes we can, it's a temporary side effect until you get used to it. So we can medicate, we can give anti-nausea medication until the patient gets used to the medication. You can also have constipation, and there's also ways to deal with that, from lifestyle changes to also laxative and eating more fiber.
What are the guidelines on the amount of physical activity, the number of calories, that sort of thing?
It depends. And there are numbers that when you go to a medical conference, they will tell you for exercise, you should do at least 150 minutes of moderate to vigorous exercise. And that sounds like a lot of time. And it's not something that is practical for most of my patients. The patients that I see are older people with medical conditions that have arthritis, they have hip pain, or people that are just very sedentary. They're not used to exercising. So if I tell them that they need to do 150 minutes of exercise that is vigorous every week, then that's not going to happen. So usually what I start where I meet the patient where they are. And if you're not exercising at all and you are having arthritis pains, then I may tell you to go for 20 minutes of walking and try to do that every day. Some people cannot do that much exercise, so then I can suggest some chair exercises. And I do not start with an hour three times a week. I start with do 50 minutes of chair exercises every day or three times a week. You know, it's a negotiation kind of process. So the answer to the exercise question is it depends. It depends on where you are at and where you begin. In terms of the calories and the nutrition, it also depends. So the calories that you need to maintain your weight depend on how big you are. If you're tall, or even if you're short but you're very overweight, then you're going to need more calories than someone who weighs less. And then what kind of diet is best for you, it depends on you. It depends on what will work that you can maintain. So for example, if you're a vegetarian and I tell you that I want you to do a keto diet, that's going to be very hard because how many vegetables will fall in that category? So that's not going to work. Sometimes people have dietary preferences, then you have to accommodate that. So we work with a variety of methods, and the simplest advice that I give people is to reduce the amount of sugar in your diet. Well, I actually start with sugary drinks. People love to drink sodas, Coke, Mountain Dew, sweet tea is big here, and the calories add up. And some people drink a lot of those drinks. So if you are struggling with your diet and you come to my clinic and you are drinking sugary drinks, that's the first thing that I eliminate. That's the first change. So you don't even have to go into a very strict diet necessarily. Sometimes we just work with small changes. So we meet you where you are at. So after people cut out the sugary drinks, then I go to the sweets. If you are someone that is eating chocolates all day, then stop eating chocolates all day. Yeah, then I go to the starchy foods. So the starchy foods, the breads, the pasta, the potatoes, I don't tell people do not eat those. I tell them eat more protein. So if you are eating meat and potatoes, then make sure that the portion of meat is bigger than the portion of potatoes and start with the meat. And then after you finish the meat, then you can start with the potatoes. By the time that you get to the potatoes, you probably are not going to be that hungry, so you're going to be eating less. So those are some of the basic things that I start with patients. Some patients need more structure, so we have a meal replacement diet in our office, which is exactly that. We give you the foods that you're supposed to eat, and these are shakes and bars and other kinds of products. And these are not meant to be a diet that you're going to follow forever, but more of a transition, like a starting point, a reset kind of diet. And so people do that. They get into the habit of controlling their portion size and eating differently. And then with our dietitians, we work in the process of transitioning people to eating a regular diet, which is the ultimate goal, to have people eat a regular diet that is healthy and that they can sustain. Because I think the key is to have a diet that you can sustain long term.
Absolutely. Does age play a factor? I mean, does your ability to lose weight, your metabolism, does that change as you age?
It does, but it does less than people think. So there have been studies looking at metabolic rate as people age, and your metabolic rate really doesn't start falling in a measurable way until you're 60. You probably have seen that people start gaining weight much sooner, and actually between 50 and 60, in general, usually a little earlier, that's when people gain the most weight. And that has to do with hormonal changes, both in men and women. In women, menopause, your estrogen levels drop. And in men, testosterone levels drop, and that will lead to it's really something that it's still under investigation. We don't really know why this happens. People become hungrier, and they start accumulating fat in the wrong places, around their visceral organs, around your liver, around your intestines, so around your middle. And those are normal, natural changes that occur with aging. We don't know enough to reverse them yet. For example, when women are given estrogen as replacement after menopause, that doesn't really help them lose weight. So it's still a bit of a mystery, and it's unfortunate because it would be great to, if it was only that simple, okay, here's your estrogen and everything is back to normal, that would be very easy, but it's not. It's not. It doesn't work that way.
And I also hear things about intermittent fasting.
Yes.
What does that entail, and what are the benefits of that, or do you think that there are benefits?
I think that there are benefits for some people. So they, with intermittent fasting, you restrict your eating times to a certain period in a day. So instead of eating whenever you feel like it, you decide, I'm going to eat, a very common schedule would be from 12 to 8, so from noon to 8 p.m. So that basically means you're skipping one meal, you're skipping breakfast, and then you start with lunch, and you're able to eat dinner, and then maybe a snack, but after 8 p.m. you're not gonna eat anymore. And so that gives you the period from 8 p.m. to noon the next day that you're not eating, that you're not putting calories, energy into your body. You can drink water, you can drink tea, not sweet tea, but just regular tea. So you it's not like you're not putting anything in your mouth, but you're restricting what you're eating. So some people that are doing that kind of routine, they will have coffee in the morning, just not, no cream added, no sugar added. And then they, with that, they're good until noon. And that works for a lot of people because a lot of times we're not hungry in the morning. The way the body works is that we have hormonal changes throughout the body that control our appetite. So it's very common for people to not be hungry in the morning. But then between 6 and 8, when you get home from work, that's when we tend to be hungrier and have less self-control because we just want to eat a little snack here, a little snack there. So then using that, it's is something that is not difficult to do. Then some people will do that kind of routine, and then once or twice a week, they will go through a 24-hour period when they're not eating. They're drinking water and tea and maybe coffee, but not eating anything substantial. And then that what that means is that you're skipping two meals. So it may be that you're skipping breakfast and lunch, and then you're just eating a dinner. And it helps because then if you're only eating one meal a day, then how much can you eat during that meal? And then you're supposed to be making good choices for that meal and eating vegetables and meat, and not everybody does that, but they still lose weight because they are not eating the rest of the day. So that can work for some people. It's something that we use. Whether it's a good eating pattern, whether it's something that you can sustain, it's still early to tell. And there was a recent study that showed that maybe it's not so great for some people, that there was a slight increase in heart attacks in people who were doing that. That it was a very small study, so we still don't know if that's true or not. But I think that if it works for you and you lose weight, then you reduce your risk of high blood pressure and diabetes. So overall, you could also benefit. So, you know, the jury is still out.
So tell me the response, the patients that you've treated before, how have they taken to the program and what insights have they shared with you?
It's a very satisfying kind of practice that when you're doing obesity medicine, because people tend to do really well and you can see the results quickly, as opposed to a lot of the other things that I do. I treat high blood pressure, everything that an internal medicine doctor will do, where I help people, but people don't know that I help them because maybe I prevented a heart attack in 10 years, but they do not know that they were going to have a heart attack in 10 years. But when I am working with someone and they lose 50 pounds in a year, they feel so much better, and they are actually able to measure that difference, and they see it. They see it in the mirror. They see it in the clothes that fit better. They see it in that their knees don't hurt anymore. Their back doesn't hurt. And usually people are very grateful and very happy. And then it makes me happy, too, to see that I have been able to do something really good. So it has been a good response, and I think where you see it also is that people send their friends. So a lot of the patients that I see are there because their friend so-and-so send them my way, and sometimes people wait for months to be able to get an appointment. So I am growing the department, and I'm adding I have a PA, a nurse practitioner, and I'm adding another nurse practitioner to help out with that access to patients.
That's great. So what is the average length of time that you work with them, or do they continue to follow up with you?
So weight is a chronic issue. It's a lifelong problem for most people, or all people who suffer from that. So so usually when people come to see me, I will see them very frequently, or you know, in coordination with my with the other people in my group. So I will see them every month while we are making the adjustments in their medications and monitoring their weight and counseling. And then after they reach their goal weight, then go into the maintenance mode. So then we will space out their appointments to every 3 and to every 6 months. But it's the follow-up needs to be long-term and lifelong because weight is, like I said, it's a chronic problem. So if you do not follow up on it, then it will come, some of the weight will come back, and then we always have resources to deal with that.
Do you find that a lot of people talk about they'll have some success on their own with losing weight, but there's inevitably a plateau?
Yeah.
And they can't get beyond that point. Why is that? Why is that true of so many?
Because you whenever you change something in your body, whether it be adding a medication or trying a new diet or exercising more, you will lose weight, but then your body is going to try to get into a new equilibrium. So there's a theory that there's a set point of weight. So if your weight is 140, your body thinks that that's a good weight for you, 140. But if you lose 10 pounds and you get to 130, then your body is going to try to get to the 140 because your body thinks is the best weight for you. So it will do so by making you hungrier. It may slow down your metabolic rate. It will try to get you there. So what we do with medications is that we reset that set point. So we tell your body, no, 140 is not good. It's 130. So it will get you to 130, but then it will stop because it thinks, oh, 130 is a good weight. So then if you, and I probably chose the wrong weight because it's not 140 and 130 are good weights anyway. But if you want to get to 120, then you have to change something. You have to increase the dose of the medication or add another medication to get that to reset. So when people lose weight, they start a new diet, more exercise. It's the same thing, kind of thing. Your body reaches a new set point, and once you get there, if you want to get past that, then you have to do something different. And I see a lot of people that have been very successful with their diet and exercise, but they reach that plateau, and then they come to me, and then I'm able to help them, and that often involves medications, and they have good results. But with medications, you will reach a plateau as well, and that will be different for different people. But we have different medications available that sometimes we can combine. There are very exciting developments in the world of obesity medicine. I'm going to a conference later this month to learn about those medications that are still under investigation, that are not in the market. There's one that helps you gain muscle but lose fat, and I think that's going to be marvelous if they are able to prove that it works and it's safe, for example. So lots of new things in the horizon.
Isn't that amazing that even after all this time that the science is continuing to evolve and we're continuing to learn new things about our bodies and how they work?
That's right. Amazing. There's a lot that we don't know about our body. So we talk about the Ozempic. There's another medication that was recently approved for weight loss. It's called tirzepatide. And tirzepatide is the generic name. Brand name is Mounjaro for diabetes and Zepbound for weight loss. And that one works even better than the Ozempic because it mimics two hormones that your body makes, GLP-1 and GIP. And that combination leads to more weight loss. So where with Ozempic, on average, people will lose 17, or not on average, but they can lose up to 17%. Of their body weight. With Mounjaro and Zepbound, it can be 22%. And there was a study that showed that people can lose 26%. So that's a significant amount. If you are 200 pounds, that means that you can lose 50 pounds if you're an average person. And some people lose more. So, you know, these are very exciting developments, and it's a great time to be helping people with obesity.
Thank you, Dr. Chiquez. This was wonderful.
Thank you, Jamie.
For more information on the Metabolic and Weight Center, we encourage our listeners to visit watsonclinic.com/weightcenter. In-office and telemedicine appointments with the center and Dr. Chiquez may be scheduled from our website or by calling 863-680-7190. That's it for this episode of Watson Clinic Health Talk. To make sure you don't miss a single future episode, subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, please consider leaving us a positive star rating and review. Thank you for listening.